It's Helping Hand. Weekly segment airs Fridays on HPR1 stations during the afternoon drive broadcast of All Things Considered, and then it is online at hawaiipublicradio.org. Helping Hand puts a spotlight on an organization, topic, or event that supports people with disabilities and people and animals who are among the most vulnerable. I'm Dave Lawrence. This week we are learning about a Vietnam nonprofit called Save Vietnam's Wildlife and their role in trying to save pangolins, the most trafficked mammal on Earth. It's a creature few people in America have even heard of, let alone seen alive somewhere. The pangolin is a toothless, defenseless, scaled mammal. Looks sort of like an armadillo. It's being killed off primarily to feed demand from consumers in the Asia Pacific, mainly in China and Vietnam. All eight species are under the most severe protection, which has done little to prevent the poaching of at least 1 million in the last decade. Save Vietnam's Wildlife have established themselves as one of the most knowledgeable organizations when it comes to caring and rehabilitating pangolins, and today it is a huge thrill to be joined by Jessica Jimerson, veterinary manager at Save Vietnam's Wildlife, and Dr. Lam Kim Hai, staff veterinarian and also a senior member of the team at Save Vietnam's Wildlife. Welcome, Hai and Jessica. Thanks for doing this.
Hi, yeah.
Hi, Dave. Yeah, thanks. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It's great to have you guys. And we hear a lot about Vietnam in our reporting as a top consumer nation and as a gateway nation for Chinese consumers to acquire illegal wildlife products. It might surprise some folks listening to learn that there is actually a local Vietnam nonprofit trying to save animals and doing amazing work, and that would be you guys. Explain who you guys are and what your mission is.
Okay, so our ultimate mission is to save the animal from extinction. Recently, like in the last few years, we rescued so many pangolins because, as you say, we are the gateway to trafficking of pangolins to China. And then usually animal get caught in the border.
You're saying the Vietnamese authorities bust the pangolin smugglers at the border, and that's how you guys end up getting them in your custody.
So that's why we have so many rescue animals. In the last 2 years, we rescued 1,036 pangolins. We have been trying so much to improve the care for animals, so we just built a big vet clinic.
So we have 56 enclosures, but a lot of rescues are more than 56 pangolins. So we are limited in our ability to take on pangolins, but it doesn't mean that we don't take them in. So ultimately, we end up pretty overcrowded.
That's pretty heartbreaking. And you guys are the experts there. Jessica, fill us in a little bit. How does it come in? You guys get a call from Vietnamese authorities. Give us the play-by-play. What happens that leads to one of these rescues?
So Save Vietnam's Wildlife has worked really hard over the last 4 years, especially to develop strong relationships with local government and national government. So basically, we work with the government when they get these confiscations. We try to make our name prevalent in Vietnam so that when there is a pangolin, people think, oh, see Vietnam's wildlife, and then they call us. So it's getting better and better, and we know it's improving because we get more calls and the government are more willing to work with us. We go out to the rescue site with a whole team of people, staff from our communications staff, education management staff, and then, of course, our captive team goes out. We rescue the pangolin. Usually they're in these netted bags, and we basically cut them open out of the bags. Our veterinarians will do exams on the animals, treat their most critical problems, and then we rush them back to the rescue center where we can stabilize them and begin the rehabilitation process.
A smuggling operation has been intercepted in some way. The government ends up with the pangolins, and then they call you. Is that how the rescue happens?
Yeah. The vultures will take pangolin from the forest, and then they take one by one, and then they accumulate all animals in one area for the shipping time. And when they have enough number of animals, they will bring that large number to China or some area that consume pangolin. And then on the way up, they transferring the animals. They will three, four men holding the pangolin down, one holding two front legs, the other is the leg and the tail, and then the other man try to thrust the tube down the throat, animal try to get into the stomach, and then they pump a lot to make the animal heavier. And that's why they can sell the animal for higher price. And every pangolin we rescue, they have the same problem. They have a big belly. They have been frogfish for many times, not only once when they transfer the animal, because the pangolin have the tendency to curve into the bone. That is their natural behavior. So then the poacher will put them in the nest back and tie it, re-tie, so that the animal cannot uncurve, which means the animal had to be in the bone for weeks, and then they don't have a chance to eat, to drink, and they have to defecate into the body, and then they want to smuggling the pangolin. So they will put a lot of animal in one small truck and stack them over one over the other, and then they will all cover in the feces. So when the pangolin come to us, they got a lot of dermatitis because of the cuts of the mesh bags, and also because of feces. Yeah, and then they will call us and we come to rescue.
I think the most important thing, though, Dave, is I'm here as a capacity builder, and this is a Vietnamese NGO run by local people from this community for this organization and not just by foreigners. That's what's going on here.
And that's a good thing. So how about we explain what you're doing over there, Jessica, and what this organization is?
Right. So I'm here as a capacity builder for Save Vietnam's Wildlife. And what that means is that I'm here to identify areas that could be developed further to basically enhance the care that they are providing for the animals. And specifically, I work as a veterinary technician in the States. And in Vietnam, their veterinary services are fairly limited. So my job is to identify areas where we can help them grow and expand on their education and skill set by either inviting other, you know, friends and colleagues from other zoo and wildlife veterinary hospitals here to train them, or by sending them places so that they can get further education. But really, it's about expanding their capacity to provide care for these animals. Specifically, my job is in veterinary medicine or veterinary care, but we also, you know, have capacity builders in scientific research and husbandry as well. So this is a Vietnamese run and operated organization.
So would it count as a nonprofit, and how does it get its funding?
Right. So we're a nonprofit. Most of our funding, we do have donors, but it's a lot of our volunteer program. Volunteers who come here, they pay a fee, and that program is definitely one of our most sustainable means of support and running this organization, running this rescue center. We're definitely run by donations. We, you know, we don't receive government support.
And you mentioned a critical thing. So not only do you not get government support, but you have a unique volunteer program where people can basically pay to come and be a volunteer there, use their skills, and assist this organization. Explain how that works and put out the call to people who could be listening in the community here that would have invaluable skills.
Right. So we welcome anyone who has an interest in animals or who just wants to come out and have an experience. We welcome them to come. They will pay to volunteer with us, and they can stay with us really as long as they want. We really do ask for a minimum of 2 weeks when they come, but we also accept professional volunteers. So anyone who may be a human doctor, animal doctor, maybe they work in a zoo or a wildlife rescue themselves, they have real applicable skills, they can come as a professional volunteer, and we can waive certain fees, and they don't have to pay that fee because they offer us something else. So maybe not funding for our rescue center, but support in a way that we can hopefully build our capacity more and learn from these individuals.
People, you're saying, who have a particular skill that they can share with the team there, just like you are, and leave that behind as a critical thing. Those are people that you're really looking for. So what are the skill sets that you most could use over there right now?
So definitely veterinary skills. Veterinarians, we can always use more medical support because of so many of our animals. They're either ill, they have some sort of disease that we can't understand because we lack the diagnostic capability, or it's a lot of wound management because they've suffered trauma from the trade. So we really do need that kind of personnel, but also husbandry staff. So people who work in zoos, wildlife rescues, who have experience working with wild animals, because it's not the same as dogs and cats. Support from people with that skill set or that background, that's always, you know, really wonderful to have.
And in terms of equipment that you guys have, so if people wanted to make a donation to you guys to buy specific equipment that you might need, can you put out the names of some of the kinds of gear that is lacking there to kind of seed people's minds?
Yeah, if you see what we've already started to develop, you know, we have a really nice vet clinic that we've recently gotten support from a donor to build, but the center is basically empty. You know, we lack the diagnostic tools, and that includes hematology equipment to help analyze the blood, x-ray equipment so that we can see what's going on inside of these animals, ultrasound equipment. You know, basically we have these animals that we don't really understand physiologically. We're understanding their anatomy better as we get more experience, but really we lack the ability to diagnose disease in these animals, which prevents us from curing their problems. So it's the most expensive equipment, unfortunately, but anyone who wants to donate towards any of that equipment, you know, we would be so humbled by that. Anything like that.
And at their website, svw.vn, where you can donate online, they've enabled through partner agencies for U.S. citizens to be able to make tax-deductible contributions and claim a tax credit which you'll see on their donate page. If there are people listening who have web skill sets, Jessica, and they're touched by the devotion of these folks to these animals, and literally when you read about, say, Vietnam's wildlife, you will read that these people in Vietnam have developed among the very best techniques for managing a hard to keep in captivity animal. So could you really use help from people who have web savvy?
You know, we've just recently hired on a couple of staff members that are looking to improve that aspect of our organization, but that does not mean that we don't look for, you know, continued support or experience from other experienced web developers internationally. So if people have that skill set, you know, I think it's wonderful to incorporate other people's experiences or education and improve ours, even if we do have some of the best in Vietnam. You know, we still have a long way to go as far as improving those things.
Explain an average day there, Jessica. To get Jessica to do this interview, it took months of coordination and often it's not like you're a typical thing where you feel like someone's blowing you off. It was frequently she's involved with these heartbreaking rescues. Sometimes she would send photographs that really were touching. So because it's radio and we're describing this for folks who are driving home, kind of describe your average day there and what one of these rescues is like.
So basically, you know, we start our day off pretty much the same. It's normally tea with the keepers, setting up for the day, thinking about what we're going to do, considering what species we're taking care of, because we are more than just pangolins. We're the Pangolin and Carnivore Conservation Program. So we're thinking about all the species in our center and what they need for the day. So, you know, at any given moment, we might be providing some sort of care for a rescue that may have happened a month ago, and then we get a phone call and it's passed down through the chain, and then all of a sudden we're all rallying together. We have a bus that we will load up with wooden boxes, veterinary care, towels, all the different things that we'll need at the rescue site. And then we're rushing out, usually in less than an hour. Next thing you know, everything that you needed to get done at the rescue center is no longer the priority. And now you're out rescuing more animals to bring them back into our center. And then it all starts all over again. You know, every single day is different.
It's got to be emotionally draining. And I described some of it earlier. When you find these pangolins, and I'll have a video that's up there that shows the heartbreaking nature of this team arriving. There's a bunch of these animals that are curled up. They're in little sacks. Take it from there about what has happened to these animals prior to that and then what you do with them.
So the traders, they want to make as much money off the pangolin as possible. So what happens with these individuals for the most part is they are force-fed a slurry of cornmeal, starch, mixed with water, and makes them weigh more. So these pangolins have been held down by men, traffickers, and then tubes just forced down into their stomachs, and then they're just pumped full of this liquid formula that essentially makes them weigh a lot more. And then as soon as they're done being tube-fed, they're curled up very tightly into a ball by the trafficker, put into the netting bag so that they can't unroll themselves. And essentially, they're inside this bag, but they're still alive. So, you know, they roll and they roll and their scales will catch on the netting of the bag and they make little cuts everywhere, defecating on themselves, urinating on themselves. And before you know it, you know, they've got small wounds that are infected all over their bodies. When we pull them out of the bags, they're usually fairly bloated. Their stomachs are pretty distended. They're in a state of, their gastric system has been so traumatized, and they've also been starved. They haven't eaten in who knows how long. They're incredibly malnourished and dehydrated. And so as soon as we open those bags, we identify the ones that need veterinary services, but we have to prioritize the ones that look like they'll survive. So, you know, we split animals off, we start putting them into boxes. And then once we get all of them in the boxes, then we can start working on which ones need emergency treatment to save their lives. And our preventative program is getting better. So we are saving more pangolins from these issues, but it's an issue it is really traumatic to see these things. And it's not like one individual you find is suffering from it. It's usually all of them. And then it just causes a whole slew of problems once you get them back into the rescue center too. So it doesn't end at the rescue site. Once you get them out of the bag, all of a sudden they're safe and healthy. No, then they come back to the center and they've got a lot of problems, and it makes it even harder to keep them alive because they're starting behind the eight ball at that point. So unhealthy.
Yeah, the abuse that they go through that you've described, I'm sure makes a lot of people very angry. You said something really critical. Once you get these guys back, not only are they have an uphill battle because of the horrible treatment they've been given between the force feeding and the way they've been kept, which is the inappropriate food for them, and now they have major medical problems and infections. But pangolins, one of the reasons that this crisis is existing is pangolins are notoriously difficult to keep in captivity. So not only are they ill when you're bringing them in and have they been traumatized, but explain how this is not a creature that people are going to find at the zoo down the street.
Right. Pangolins haven't been kept in captivity with any ease whatsoever. There are certain zoos in the States that are starting to keep certain African species, but for the most part, the only zoos that have really been able to keep them are in Asia, and even still, they struggle with the same exact husbandry-related issues. So they have a very specialized diet. It's a specific insect diet, and each species is very different. So even if we learn from one species, there are 8 different species, so then try to apply it to another one, and it's completely different. They're very different behaviorally as well. So it's just everything we do is a learning experience. And one of the things that we come across, it's a challenge, is, you know, we want to report the things we're doing and share the information, but we barely have the time to get our day-to-day work done, let alone then try to publish information and share with other wildlife rescues and zoos internationally about what we're doing to be successful. And even if we, you know, we don't really know that we are successful in keeping pangolins in captivity long-term, because we release our pangolins. We're a rescue site. We rehabilitate them, and then we release them. We're not trying to keep them long-term. So yeah, we do okay at rehabilitating them, but honestly, I can't imagine keeping them long term.
And you're an expert who has so much more understanding than the average person, and you obviously care about them. So in order to prevent their extinction, and while people are trying to change the mentality in China when it comes to the consumption of these and in other places, do you recommend that effort is made into learning how to keep them in captivity so that people can not just rehabilitate them, but learn how to keep them in captivity, breed them, and keep them safely for long term that way?
Honestly, I think the priority is education. It's public education. It's in native countries, you know, range countries where these species are endemic. But it's also, even in the States, we might not have pangolins native, but it is about us all being well educated on the trade and what's going on and what the consumerism is. And even if you may not be consuming it directly, the United States is listed 3rd underneath China and Vietnam as they are involved in pangolin trafficking. And we're not sure why that is or what's coming into the United States or what's going out. But we know that we're involved, so we should just be educated on the trade, and I think that that should be the priority.
And you say that according to the literature you see, after China and Vietnam, the United States is listed 3rd in terms of role with the pangolin crisis?
That's correct.
That's fascinating. I'm sure that disturbs people. And you were talking about the difficulty in keeping them, and you don't keep them very long. I understand there's an ant-based food product that's available for people in Vietnam that actually makes your role in feeding the captive pangolins even easier.
Yeah. So we ordered the frozen ant egg from Ho Chi Minh City, and yeah, it's a delicacy down there. So it's very expensive, but yeah, it's the primary source of their diet. So we're lucky in Vietnam we have that. A lot of other countries, they don't have that kind of access.
When you release them, it's kind of like when they put a rhino back in the wild in Africa. How can you feel like the place that you're releasing them, they're going to be safe and not caught again?
So our organization, you know, we do a lot of different things to save these species in the wild, and it is a lot more than rehabilitation. You know, at our release sites, we are starting to put in anti-poaching enforcement teams to help with that. And we're also working with the government to keep sites protected and do a lot of workshops at the release sites with local people to talk about illegal wildlife trade, poaching, why it's wrong, the species that are endemic to their area and why they're precious. And it really is working on behavior change within local communities. And then on top of that, working to protect the sites that we release them. And so it's a lot of trust in the community, but it's a lot of effort put in by our organization, by the local governments, and by those communities to all take part in these opportunities, these workshops.
Are there strict laws there in Vietnam to protect the pangolin? So when you say it's a matter of trust and you're hoping people won't go and scoop up the ones that you release, is there any attempt by law enforcement to defend them? And do people who get caught ever do real time?
There is law enforcement, and the law is improving for wildlife protection in this country, especially any species is endangered, and pangolins are protected. So if a trafficker gets caught with a pangolin, they are punished for it. There are fines, and honestly, I don't know. Do they go to jail at all?
Yeah, they go to jail. So they get 1 billion Vietnam dong.
1 billion.
1 billion. It means 50,000.
50,000.
Yes, sir.
U.S. dollars.
Yeah. That's the fine you're saying. 15 grand in U.S. dollars is the fine?
Yeah.
1 billion Vietnamese dong is the fine.
Yeah. 50,000.
50,000?
Yeah. 50,000 okay. U.S. dollar.
But no jail, Hai. They don't go to jail.
I had to look again on the laws because they say for a certain amount, for a certain number of animals, they will have different punishment.
Mm.
Yeah. So there was a case that they have 15 animals and they actually go to jail.
Right. Yeah. So they had 15 animals.
Yeah.
Then they go to jail. But if they have one animal, maybe they just get the fine.
Yeah.
And so thinking of ways that people can help you with this, you're obviously overwhelmed there. Is it at all important for people to contact Vietnamese officials, complain about a lack of enforcement, or contacting the people who are in charge of the country? Or is that not an effective tactic?
I'll let Hai answer this because I don't know.
Okay, so in 2015, in Vietnam, the government covered Pangolin scale in health insurance, which means the government will pay for you to use the medicine made from scales. Mm. And organizations have been working on that with the government. And finally, in the end of 2015, we lift that coverage. And then now Pangolin become completely illegal in one health insurance. In 2016, we are promoting pangolin from into CITES I, which means the animal is completely protected by the CITES laws over the world. So that's what we have been working with the governments.
And so in terms of the best ways people can support you, people can make a contribution and they can help you to buy equipment that you need there. They can help you to expand your facilities. They can help you to house more pangolins when they come in. People can also volunteer. Jessica, now your role there is an interesting one. As you speak to ways that people can volunteer, explain like how you ended up there as an American and the most important ways that you think people can support this organization.
Okay, so I used to work for the Houston Zoo as a veterinary technician, and the Houston Zoo is also a nonprofit organization focused on wildlife conservation. I applied for a grant looking to help pangolins, and I was just interested in pangolins originally, and then I found Hai just by emailing rescue centers in Africa and Asia that had pangolins, asking if they were interested in doing a capacity building project, a development project, or an enhancement project. And so Hai was all about it. So I came here last year for a month and we worked on collecting blood from pangolins and improving our technique for venipuncture and then doing manual hematology out in the field. So we just used the money to basically draw blood from pangolins and look at it and see if the animals were healthy or not, is to put it bluntly. And then after that, I just saw a lot of things that they could use, a lot of support that they could use. And then they put out a posting to hire a veterinary capacity builder, which could be a veterinarian or a veterinary technician. And then I applied for it and they hired me. So it sort of worked out just based on working with Hai and being interested in pangolins and having a skill set that was useful. And that's the thing, is that, you know, you don't have to have like a wildlife conservation degree or a background in wildlife conservation to become a conservationist. You know, we have people helping us all the time that they don't work with animals in the slightest, but they come here and they volunteer, or they just talk about pangolins. They share information about pangolins on their social media accounts. You know, they talk about pangolins with their families, and it's just spreading the word about the species, because the more that the world cares about pangolins or knows about pangolins, the more that there is sort of like a social pressure in these countries, like in Southeast Asia, that all of a sudden people care about this species. And it's not about shaming anyone for traditionally using a species, but it is about creating like a public interest in a species that may influence younger generations of people in Southeast Asia that may have otherwise consumed pangolins. They might be less inclined if they see it on like global social media that people actually care about these species and why. So I think that's a really important way, and it's an easy way that people can help save the species.
Those are all great suggestions. And before I give your contact information, and those are a lot of different ways that people can support and to become a volunteer on any different kind of level of capacity. And as Jessica was saying, you're a volunteer just when you're posting their stories on social media and spreading the stories about the pangolins and helping to educate people. There are some pangolins, I understand, that can never go back into the wild, that live at your facility, and they're probably going to stay there forever. Can you tell the story of any one pangolin, Jessica, that you've gotten close to, or just something about one pangolin, an experience that's endearing to, so that when people think about them, they can think of one particular animal?
So when I started in the spring, Hai, our veterinarian, went on a rescue. We got a call that there was a baby pangolin. And normally when we get a call like that for a single pangolin, we're a little bit like, okay, is it really a pangolin or is it going to be like a squirrel? So Hai basically drove very far away, several kilometers, to find this neonate pangolin, Sunda pangolin, with no mother. And you know, we can only assume that maybe they had the mother at some point and the mother died and then they attempted to raise this baby. But regardless, we ended up hand-rearing this pangolin, and that's very difficult to do. And Hai, especially Hai An Huang, our other veterinarian, they worked day and night. And then that was my first experience to hand-rear a pangolin. We worked so hard to keep this baby alive, and we definitely made a lot of mistakes. But Pika, we ended up naming her Pika. She's still alive, and she's she's getting bigger, but she, you know, she'll never be able to be released because she lacks the normal pangolin behavior. And if we released her, you know, she's so used to people and she's been kept by people her whole life, it would just really not set her up for success. So she'll live with us forever. But after rescuing her and hand-rearing her with the vets and learning from their expertise and seeing what we were capable of, it definitely gives you a lot of hope for what else you could possibly do with these animals.
Do they ever make a sound, Jessica, or are they just silent?
They don't make sound. Well, they do create a sound, but they don't vocalize. So they make like a huffing sound, like a sniffing sound. And when they're upset, they kind of like huff and puff pretty loud and they'll snort, but they don't actually vocalize.
They're a very endearing creature. And when you go to their website, which is svw.vn, you can make a secure donation online. You can learn about their mission and you can learn about these very endearing creatures. If you'd like to find out how you can help them, maybe you have specific skills that you'd like to offer, make a huge donation, have some other questions or concerns, info@svw.vn is how to reach them. And you can also look for Save Vietnam's Wildlife on Facebook, where at their Facebook page you can get the latest updates on the harrowing rescues they pull off. And that includes seeing some truly inspiring videos of these rescues of the pangolins and of them taking care of the pangolins once they're in their custody. And these are all at their Facebook page, which will be linked in our post. You can get the full interview, the radio feature, and all their contact information and all of our previous Helping Hand guests at hawaiipublicradio.org. We will also have their phone number, their physical address, and links to find them on Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. It's a huge thrill to be talking with an organization that are doing something very noble. It's Save Vietnam's Wildlife, and they are one of the most knowledgeable organizations when it comes to caring and rehabilitating pangolins, and as we've heard, they care for other creatures too there, but that is perhaps the one that they're best known for. And today we've been talking with Jessica Jimerson, veterinary manager, and we've been thrilled to have Dr. Lam Kim Hai, staff veterinarian, one of the longest serving people there, an NGO that's in Vietnam, run by Vietnamese people, that is dedicated to saving these animals. It is truly humbling. I'm really grateful that you guys would take the time to do this. And when I watch some of your videos on Facebook, it is just nothing but heartbreaking. I can't imagine how strong all of you are to go there on the scene and pull those animals out of those little bags and to provide them the medical care that they need. So I hope that this segment gets you some publicity and gets you some donations. And on behalf of all the animals that you're helping and all the pangolins you're saving, thank you so much for doing what you're doing. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for this opportunity, honestly. Thanks for being so patient with us.
Thank you so much for the opportunities, yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much. Well, yeah, hopefully it goes far.
Yeah, thank you so much.